Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. This week, we discuss the latest episode, Citadel Rescue, and we listen to your voicemails.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network, your source for all things Clone Wars. We're here tonight to talk about Citadel Rescue, episode 64 of Clone Wars, episode 20 of season 3, production number 17 of season 3. And I'm joined this evening by Jen.
Good evening.
Nathan P.
Hello.
And standing in for Barrent this week is Jerry.
Yes, and I believe it is my role this week to disagree with everything Nathan says, so I'm happy to step in.
I'm sure you'll fill your part admirably. We are here to talk about Citadel Rescue, the conclusion to the Citadel trilogy. And not a bad conclusion, in my opinion, but don't just take my word for it. Let's go around and get everyone's overall impressions of the episode. And we'll start with Jen.
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. There were a couple things that I didn't care for, and we'll probably get into that in a little bit more detail, but for the most part, I thought it was okay. My husband was freaking out because he actually liked the Coruscant Knight stuff, and I know we'll get into this in Continuity Corner, but he was unhappy that they killed Evan Peel and very unhappy that they killed the droids in R2's posse there, but I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was a nice little balance of some action and some plot. I kind of like that we got to see Ahsoka grow a little bit. I feel like she doesn't grate on anybody, it seems like, anymore like she used to. So it's good to see her kind of coming into her own. And I like the Inupas. They were just fun to watch. They were neat.
All right. Nathan?
No, I actually like the episode. I think this entire trilogy was really solid. I mean, there are things we can nitpick about it, but overall, it was a really good trilogy with a nice action-packed end cap, the way that pretty much any Star Wars trilogy is designed from Lucas's standpoint. I really would like to see more of the interaction between Tarkin and Anakin. Hopefully it's not just a one-off for this particular small storyline. And yes, I know Evan Peel dies, and yes, that's a freakout, and yes, it has everybody going nuts, but if you can ignore that, or you can at least take it as a fait accompli that something like that's going to happen again in the Clone Wars at some point, it is a really good episode, shocks aside.
All right, Jerry.
Hey, guys. First, I am so happy to be back on Republic Forces Radio Network just to chat with you guys. It's been several weeks, so I'm really looking forward to a good conversation. Of what I think, I haven't been on the last couple of shows, obviously, I think this overall trilogy was pretty good. I enjoyed this week's episode. I thought it wrapped it up nicely. And, you know, Jen, I think you and Nathan both said it. I mean, there are a few things to nitpick on, and, you know, I've got like five bullet points of things to talk about, and, you know, nothing major, but I really enjoyed the series. I think it's the most Clone Warsy stuff we've gotten here in season 3.5. So looking forward to talking. I thought it was good stuff.
Now, I too really enjoyed this episode. I thought this was a nice conclusion. I haven't read the Coruscant Knights, so I had no attachment to the point in time when Evan Peel died. So I thought that was a holy crap. This series took a step up as far as its seriousness in my book, because killing a major movie character, that takes some major cojones. So I was very impressed with it. I liked the whole episode overall. I'm very glad that Fives made it out. I liked how Ahsoka had to come to the rescue of Tarkin, even though she hated him. Tarkin slipped back into his role of being a Tarkin this episode. But overall, great episode. Lots of fun stuff. Visually awesome. So looking forward to getting into the meat of it.
Can I say, though, is Evan or Evan Peel, is he really a major film character? I mean, the guy shows up in the background for the Jedi Council in episode 1, isn't even back for real in episode 2, it's just stock footage, and then Lucas left him out of episode 3. I don't know if I'd call that a major film character. Interesting that they were killing off film characters at all, but major?
Well, I didn't necessarily mean a major film character. I mean, now, well, he got to stand dangerously close to Padme.
If they bring in Chewbacca in the season finale and then kill him and it turns out it's a clone of Chewbacca later on called Chewbacca or something like that, then I'll be surprised. Then I'll feel the shock of a major film character.
Them killing anybody other than a clone or one of their own self-concocted characters is impressive to me. Our fortune cookie this week is without honor, victory is hollow. And I think we're going to see how that applies really kind of on both sides of the stick there. And things jump into an action-packed recap of the last two episodes with our newsreel.
Not really, though. Because what we get, have you noticed? The opening newsreel basically says that nothing happened last week. It's all the first part of the trilogy. It's all the first episode. Then we get a brief note about their ship being destroyed last episode. Oh, by the way, and the ship was destroyed. That's all it mentions from part two. I guess that's what happens when an episode is mostly action. And I also find it very interesting that not only is Echo's death not mentioned in the opening newsreel, it's not mentioned, you know, anywhere. There's no payoff for it whatsoever here. And the newsreel skipping over last week really, it felt weird. You know, it felt like somewhere or the other, they weren't giving credit to an episode that was actually pretty decent.
That was one thing that was very off-putting. I mean, Echo's dying sent a little bit of a shockwave through all of us who are fans of the show. That was a character that they introduced, established, gave us a lot about him that we'd learn and we enjoyed seeing. And then they just murder killed him for a stupid reason. And then they don't even mention it in the newsreel. And we get no reaction from Fives about it at any point. Nothing, no final send off as they're taking off or anything. So that was kind of a little odd.
You know, I've noticed that a lot in this series of just how cold they animate and portray the Jedi to any clone's death. I mean, we've seen it in this, even some of the nameless, like somebody falls off the rock cliff or something. And it's only to me missing the words, oh, well, I mean, you know, that's kind of how they look. That's how they act. It's like, well, let's keep going. And it's kind of weird that Echo would get that treatment. I think you're right. But I was surprised that there wasn't, like you guys said, I'm surprised that there wasn't some reference to kind of help, I guess, drive the dramatic purpose behind it. But I guess as you guys talked about last week, I guess there really was none other than say, hey, we killed a character because you know what? We'll go there. We'll take your favorite clone and we'll do it. We'll do it. Just watch it. We'll do it.
And we won't even comment on it. Take that, fanboys.
That was the thing that really bothered me about this episode, is that I was really, really hoping that they would get just like half a second, maybe just a sentence with Fives, like just reacting to Echo. But I don't even think he spoke in this episode. So it really kind of bugged me. It was like, that's a big character moment. Like you just kind of let it go. Like, why waste that? That grated on me. That was probably my big complaint for the episode.
Our heroes are running through the canyons and jumping over lava pits while being pursued by smatterings of droids here and there. They get to a cliff, which is, I guess, our first real kind of dangerous, perilous situation where some are going to have to rappel down while piggybacking, which is very, very strange. They didn't bring enough cables for everybody.
There's only so many people who are qualified to operate them, I guess. That's why I thought that was nuts.
They're like, secure yourselves, and Anakin and Obi-Wan pull out the cables and shoot them into the ground. Everybody's less like, were we supposed to bring those? Was that supposed to be in our packs?
I love that Tarkin was on, I think he was on Anakin. It's just like, is he too good to repel himself? Like, he has to, like, it was just bizarre. I was having these jokes, which are not appropriate, but it's not good.
You know, this might be a good time to talk about who's actually in this group, because we see our first ones die within this scene here. I have a really, really hard time keeping track of how many characters there are left in any given scene. And I don't think this is me. I think this is on the creative side of things. I think they keep tweaking this to add to the suspense or something, because we start with Anakin, Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, R2-D2, Tin, the two more unnamed commando droids for R2-D2, Evan Peel, Tarkin, Fives, Rex, Cody, and at least three unarmored clones, and then one armored one. The armored clone and one of the three unarmored clones fall down after the droid attack, the crab droid attack, where they're repelling and everything. They're the ones who fall to their doom. And it looks like there was only two unarmored ones going into it. But then there are still two left after one of them falls to his doom. So there must have been at least three. And then in later scenes, though, it seems to show only one unarmored clone so is showing two after the fallen heir, or do we just see another here? And then a second shows up again, just in time to be killed during the crab droid attack later, but then when everyone leaves Ahsoka and Peele to fight the droids, there's two again. So there were four when the episode started now? And then one of those dies protecting Tarkin. I mean, I don't even want to try to go into the number of Anubas or crab droids or staps or commando droids we see and their inconsistencies. I mean, it's not a huge deal, but I almost felt kind of disoriented while watching this episode, because every time I tried to consider who was left on screen rather than who was logically left, it just didn't seem like it matched up. I mean, for what it's worth, at the end of the episode, the funeral scene has, from left to right, Peele's body, then Obi-Wan, R2, Cody, Ahsoka, Anakin, Rex, one surviving unnamed clone without armor, Fives, then another unnamed and unarmored clone, and then Tarkin. It seems like those unnamed clones, especially the unarmored ones, just sort of pop out of thin air when they're needed for a scene. It felt like they couldn't keep track of the number of them. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's because we're seeing it sort of in widescreen, but not in full widescreen. So when we see it on Blu-ray, it'll make sense. We'll see some of these characters that didn't seem to be there. Maybe they were just slightly off screen. But it was really disorienting for me. And I don't think I've ever had that kind of disorientation in any of the other action sequences in the series so far.
I think it's one of those things, though, too, when they're clones, you know, you see two of them on the screen, that could be clones A and B, and then maybe, you know, half a second later, it's clones B and C, and I don't know. I don't know if there was a really, was there an establishing shot in the first episode of how many came? I don't know. I don't actually recall.
See, I don't know, because I kept trying to find establishing shots here, and the ones that I saw, I was able to go through and sort of count, but it always seemed like as soon as they switched out of the establishing shot into the scene itself, the numbers changed again. And it felt odd. And of course, we know we're going to have characters possibly dying off screen in some of these battle sequences, so who knows who's getting killed when we're not seeing them. It just really sort of felt like, especially with those clones that weren't in armor, like there was the grayish one, and then there was like the dark, dark grayish ones, and they had those head pieces on and that sort of thing. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd have to go back and be really anal retentive, which I'm not going to do this time, and go back into the previous two episodes and actually count them. But it just felt, I don't know, it felt disjointed. Maybe it's just that, you know, I was having a hard trouble following it, and they had the count exactly right all the time. But for some reason, it just felt off to me. I wonder if maybe one of the listeners may have noticed the same thing and may be able to give a better specific answer. Because I tried just fast-forwarding through the episodes bit by bit with QuickTime, and I had a lot of trouble counting these guys and trying to keep track of them.
Well, there were some definite inconsistencies in the counts. I mean, there was an inconsistency in the count even of R2-D2's droids, because we saw one of them get destroyed last week's episode. And then today he's back with three. From the beginning, he's only had three. So unless he had a spare folded up in somebody's backpack, he should have only had two. And then they get chopped down like nothing. They've worked so well in the last episode working for the Republic, but now when they really could have been used to make a difference, they just stand there and mouth off and get beat down.
Seriously, I really like the way the droids were used here, because of all the characters to stay behind and cover the retreat and be the cannon fodder who die covering them, for it not to be the random clones, but actually be these droids. I mean, we had more personality given to these droids that we had given to all the unnamed clones in the episode here. But they used the droids effectively to do that. They didn't do the illogical thing and make the droids escape because, hey, they had personalities, and leave some of those unnamed clones to be the ones covering them to die. At least they did that well. I felt like, I mean, we can't have these droids constantly be main characters of the series, more than likely, because it gives R2-D2 so much action and so much to do. It seems unlikely they would do it. But it seems like they used them very well, minus the, yeah, one of them somehow got destroyed and then miraculously was retconned back to life, I guess. But they use them pretty well, and they don't get all emotional about it. It makes sense for them to be cold towards the death of the droids as opposed to the clones. Perhaps the juxtaposition there that they're cold toward the death of both maybe says something about the way that the clones are viewed in the war, whereas we usually see the Jedi acting at least like they're considered human beings rather than cannon fodder. I don't know. I liked it.
All right, so most of our heroic team makes it down the cliff, and O.C. Sobek decides it's time to release the Anubas, and shortly thereafter, once the Anubas catch up, even though there's a slight ploy planned by Anakin and Obi-Wan, we are treated to what I thought was actually a really good battle between the Jedi and the clones and even Tarkin picking up a blaster here and there. That was a very well choreographed, and I thought it was some good timing in that fight.
I thought the whole thing was pretty cool. I thought they did the Anubis pretty well as well, because I was, last episode when they were showing the preview, I was kind of figuring they would use them kind of like hounds, where they'd be tracking them by scent, and it would be this slow kind of dragging, like hide and seek kind of fight. And I was surprised actually that they had them just charging in there and attacking people. And like, we'll get to what they did to Evan Peel in a little bit, but I thought they were really aggressive the way they handled the Anubis. And I thought that was kind of neat, because I don't know if you guys have ever seen like any video of like police dogs and stuff. Like, that's pretty scary stuff to be having charging at you. And it's a lot more, it's much different fighting something like that than another person or outright being, I guess, in the Star Wars universe. So I thought they did a pretty good job with it. I thought it was something different. We haven't seen anything like that in the Clone Wars. So I enjoyed it.
And you know, the last time, or at least the last time that I can remember prominently, that they tried to use animals against the Jedi, it was the Gutkers back in Innocence of Ryloth back in season one. And Obi-Wan, just like what usually happens with animals used against Jedi, just wound up sort of outthinking them. And you didn't really get much of an actual battle with them. It was more like a, how do we outthink this opponent? Oh, well, it's a creature. It shouldn't be that difficult. You never really felt like the Jedi were in real danger. Here, though, I mean, these things are absolutely ferocious. I mean, they reminded me in a lot of ways of the Voxen, which are the Vornskers from Merkur that are twisted by the Yuuzhan Vong in the New Jedi Order saga to create these incredible Jedi hunting creatures. I mean, they're not that ferocious, but they're the closest we've seen to something like that. And Star Wars really doesn't get a chance to show off feral, vicious creatures going after our heroes, where the heroes actually have a sense of peril most of the time. It's so often something where it's just there as a set piece and the characters can easily get away. But one of these takes down Evan Peel. And, I mean, they're really going at it to the point where you worry that maybe they'll deliver some real damage, maybe not a death, but real damage to maybe Anakin, maybe Obi-Wan, especially Ahsoka being presumably the less practiced of the four Jedi in this episode. It was really well done, and just the choreography with the stabs throughout the episode. I was very, very impressed by the action sequences here. We've seen really good choreography in hand-to-hand, and here we've got great choreography using animals and using vehicles and using clones and officers and Jedi. It really was a sight to behold.
You know, I actually found that the animals, aside from even Peel being a chew toy for one of them, I found all the rest of them kind of easy to take out. I mean, Obi-Wan just was doing roundhouse kicks and, you know, spinning wheel kicks and just kind of knocking them aside. And, you know, Anakin kind of held one off with his arm for a little bit while he got his lightsaber back. And I mean, to me, they certainly were animated and looked ferocious, but I actually thought that was going to be a serious threat throughout a longer portion of the show. Like, hey, these things are still tracking us. We got to try and lose them. Let's split up. I mean, I expected a little bit more other than, you know, it was just kind of a way to kill off even Peel.
Did anybody else get a feel of these kind of like the, was it jackal? No, hyenas in Lion King. You maybe see one of the Anubas, you know, before the battle talking about what's going on. Be like, we're going after Anakin Skywalker. Ooh, ooh, do it again, Anakin. Ooh,
oh,
you know, I mean, it screamed to me Voxen, but visually it really brought back kind of that sense of the Lion King in a good way, in a good way.
I can't honestly say that crossed my mind, although for some reason, Pink Floyd's Dogs of War just kept going through my head.
So, as we've kind of hinted at already, in the middle of this Anuba attack, Evan Peel, while taking out a crab droid and is slightly distracted, is stalked and killed by one of the Anubas. The Anuba is dispatched by Ahsoka, and then Ahsoka tells what we've all known all along. And with his dying breath, Evan tells her to shut up and listen and gives her his half of the intel. Very interesting. I have not, as I said earlier, read the Coruscant Knights, so this was kind of awesome in my book. I wasn't screaming at my TV in anguish because how dare they kill somebody who has other stories. But I thought that was just, that was pretty impressive move for them.
And not only that, Dan, if I recall, you predicted this, didn't you, in one of the previous shows?
Yeah,
you had it out for him.
I didn't have it out for him per se, but you know, when they killed somebody who they created and they've kind of, you know, gave us his life in Echoes, I didn't see Evan Peele in episode 3. I see no reason why they would use kit gloves on him, or anybody for that matter, that we didn't see taken out by Order 66, or we don't see at some point in episode 3. No one is safe in my book.
Here I was around saying, no, 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 they can't. They won't do that because of those books. Wow, boy, was I wrong. Taking the whole, you know, thousands of fanboys screaming out in terror that was suddenly silenced. Keeping that out, though, the way they handled the death was actually pretty good. I mean, you get a sense of, I mean, it would have been nice to maybe see a little bit of the gore of where he was bitten on the neck. But the fact that he just gets clamped around the neck and slammed by the Anuba, and then we see him essentially fading fast. It's not a quick death. It's not one of those extremely overlong deaths. He has enough time to just say, shut up, here's the information, and then he dies and doesn't fade, and we get to have the funeral sequence, which is handled very, you know, somberly. I think, I mean, the EU issue aside, it was a death that was handled pretty well, and I know it was probably a shock for some. I didn't really feel an emotional tug when he died, because I didn't really feel like we really got to know him very much. I was more bothered by the death of Echo than I was by the death of Evan Peele. But it was a surprise, at least.
I was really shocked that they killed him, because I know you had been talking about it, and I was thinking, no, no, they don't do that. They only kill their own characters. So I was impressed. I didn't have any attachment, I'm sorry, Nathan, but to the Coruscant Night series. I've never read it. My husband did. He was really upset. But I just thought that was really cool that they actually killed him off. And it was a really violent death when you consider the audience for this, like, mauling, like, tore his throat out. That was pretty cool. I was shocked that they had the guts to put that right on screen. And they don't really cut away from him getting kind of chewed on there either. Like, they show the whole thing and he gets thrown. I thought it was really cool. It impressed me. I liked it.
You know, here's kind of my reaction to it in terms of just how graphic it was for the show. I mean, number one, Evan Peele looks as unhuman as possible, but at the same time, he's little, like a kid. So I wonder if there's some kids who may react poorly to that. But both my kids saw it. They're like, oh, okay, cool. I thought them dropping him down in the, I guess it's not really a lava pit, but the sulfur lava pit, whatever, was, you know, for some reason I thought of Star Trek 2, where they just like, oh, Spock's dead, let's shoot him out into space. It's like, oh, Evan Peele's dead, I'm gonna dump him in the pit. It's like, I was waiting for what he actually hit for him to just start screaming. It's like, I was just in a coma.
All right, so Ahsoka now has half of the intel and has revealed that she lied to be there. Which isn't really a surprise to anyone at this point in the game, I think. We flash over to O.C. Sobek, who's decided to take the pursuit into his own hands after taking a chastising call from Dooku, where he is told that it is only his honesty keeping his sorry butt alive, because it certainly isn't his ability to keep his prisoners under control.
Since when is O.C. Sobek so honest when he just admitted, essentially, to avoiding Dooku's calls? No, 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 tell him I'm in the bathroom. Tell him I'm not here. Tell him I'm otherwise engaged, or whatever it was that he said at the end of last episode. All of a sudden, it's his honesty immediately after having lied that's keeping him alive. Was that maybe Dooku tweaking him to basically say, you better be honest with me from here on out? Because it sure doesn't seem like he could possibly be talking about really it being Sobek's honesty here. It's inconsistent with, you know, the last few seconds of their conversation.
So in the meantime, the Jedi have mounted a rescue effort. We get to see some new character. Well, not necessarily see new characters, but we get to hear new characters talk, which was kind of cool. We get to hear Stacey Teen's voice finally after seeing him just show up and stand there ominously in a few episodes.
Yeah, but you know, again, I got to bring up something that, like, this was brought up. Was it last episode? Was your last episode of the previous one where, okay, the Jedi are just, like, sitting there waiting for the call to go pick everybody up, or waiting for the call that says, we need to go in there and save everybody's butts. They've got 4 Venator Star Destroyers apparently ready to come to the rescue, okay? Why not send them in the first place? If you're going to have to pull them out anyway, why not put the ships one jump away? Why have your characters who are going to rescue them all the way back on Coruscant? Maybe some of those characters who died would still be alive if our Jedi had gotten off their butts and gone when they knew that there was going to be a problem. It seems weird that they would be waiting around on Coruscant, and it's just like one of our voicemails, I think, was last week mentioned how we have all these Jedi Masters standing around there. I mean, we had Yoda and Mace Windu keeping an eye on the situation. We have Plo and Stacey Tin keeping an eye on the situation, and Adigalia. Now we got Kit Fisto thrown into the mix, keeping an eye on the situation. It's like, geez, you know, if you're knowing there's a problem, maybe be a little bit more ready for it, be a little bit closer. You can just drop in and get them. And what's up with Stacey Tin when he shows up here saying, "There have not been battles like this since the days of the Old Republic"? And I'm not even talking about like the whole reference to the Old Republic 1,000 years ago kind of stuff again. I'm thinking, where have you been, dude? There haven't been battles like these since the days of the Old Republic. Have you been in the Clone Wars prior to this? I mean, have you been sitting back at home watching it on the newsreels? What's the deal? Unless he's talking about the Clone Wars in general, the line makes very little sense. And then here's Plo near the end. "We're out of time." Yeah, because you guys stayed around on Coruscant to stage your rescue instead of getting ready nearby. Just like mentioned last week, they probably cost Evan Peel his life by not getting in there sooner, sitting on their butts on Coruscant. I hope it makes them have trouble sleeping at night.
Well, see, here's one of these things where I don't fully understand time to travel from point A to point B in the Star Wars universe. I mean, you hear people say, oh, well, you know, even hyperspace, that would take weeks or, you know, several days. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, Nathan, but at the same time, it didn't seem like it took them that long to get there. I mean, it was like, I know it's just minutes on screen time, but it didn't seem like that they were just roaming around on, you know, the planet here, the Citadel.
But we see the Venators having to make their way through hyperspace. They are constantly, well, not constantly, but frequently cutting back to seeing the Jedi on their way. The Jedi are coming. The Jedi are coming. Just hold out a little longer. The rescuers are coming. Well, the rescuers had taken off earlier. That would have been helpful. And I know the whole, okay, well, maybe they would have just gotten back on their ship before it got blown up and conveniently took out the turret. Maybe they could have just taken that and escaped. But even then, Separatist forces are in orbit. More now, apparently, than in the last episode. There are Separatist forces in orbit. Wouldn't you have at least needed the Venators there to help cover their escape? The logic of just sticking around on Coruscant doesn't make sense to me. They could just have easily have set those scenes in the war room of one of the Star Destroyers on its way, and it would have made a lot more logical sense. I mean, granted, travel times are fudged in the series. Somehow, R2-D2 gets all the way back to Coruscant and gets help and gets all the way back during R2 Come Home or whatever that weirdly named episode was, because no one was telling him to come. It was more like Go Home. They fudged the travel time, sure. But when they're going to show them on their way and then show them on their way again and show them setting up for the mission, it really makes it obvious that they're not really, you know, taking timing into account. You can't play off the "we're out of time" at the end of the episode when you've been lollygagging the rest of the episode. It really kind of brings the point home that maybe some of these characters could have still been alive if they had shown up just a tiny bit earlier.
I think this is where we're overthinking a Cartoon Network show, too. I mean, that's just how it played out. Now, if I can take the battle at the end in a slightly different direction, here are the notes that I took. And Nathan, you touched on this a little bit. It seemed to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a moment when they all got there and Stacey Tien is just like, "Wow, we're not going to be able to get through that blockade. We're not going to be able to get you guys clear to go in there and do that." "Well, we have to." "Okay, we just did it." It's like, you know, he's complaining about how difficult it's going to be, and then they just fly right through it. And they're on the planet, and it's like 2 seconds later. And then, Nathan, you hit on it a little bit, because when they took off to escape, it's like, did this planet not have any sort of, I don't know, surface-to-air ways to try to make the escape more dramatic? I just thought it was weird that this planet, you know, or this battle up in space, which is, you know, so trademark Star Wars, right? It's like you got something going on the planet, you got something going on in the atmosphere, or in, you know, above in the space, and it felt really Star Warsy for that reason. And I kind of wish we had seen more of that versus the get in and get out type mentality it had. There was a little battle at first, but then they're just like, "All right, let's go in," and like unopposed, drop down, pick them up, see you, bye. And I was just like, that felt like a missed opportunity.
I was right with you on that one, Jerry. One of the things that's so trademark of Star Wars is these epic space battles. And that one just felt lackluster. We got a little bit, it was getting ramped up at the beginning. We were seeing hyena bombers, which we've only seen just for a little bit in a few episodes before. We got to see, I mean, there were 3 Jedis leading squads out there. This should have been an epic space battle. But instead, once we get through the first wave of a half dozen or a dozen fighters, I didn't really see where these numbers that Sacyton was that worried about were, because it seemed like they got through just fine, and then they got back out. They didn't even lose any other Jedi pilots. Everybody got in and out just fine and dandy, and then they hopped in their ships and took off.
I want to go back really quick to Sacyton. I thought he was actually kind of neat. I like the idea that they gave him this very soft, very like controlled kind of voice when he looks like this bull, like Minotaur man. I thought that was kind of cool. And he's really withdrawn and kind of serene through the whole thing. I felt like they kind of portrayed him more in the way that I think of a Jedi, in this kind of removed, detached type of mentality. And he doesn't really panic. It was just, you know, we have to do this now. It's like, okay, that struck me as a little bit odd that they just go in and have no problem at all. But at the same time, the way they've kind of been portraying, maybe I've been reading too much EU stuff, but the way they've been portraying Jedi that I've picked up is that they're really detached. They're just kind of, okay, go. And they don't really get emotionally involved in a lot of this stuff. And I thought they portrayed him that way. And I thought that was kind of neat because he's different, I think, than some of the other Jedi we've seen.
I will say one thing about Sacyton is, with him being voiced by Dee Bradley Baker, we have the chance to see him a lot more. They don't have to bring in any guest cast in order to use him. So hopefully they'll make use of that fact. I like it when they, I mean, granted, you know, there's the, oh, well, how many different voices can these same old voice actors do? I mean, yeah, there's that complaint. But when you really get down to it, when you're dealing with a cartoon, as long as you can tell the voices apart, it's fine. And here we've got a character portrayed by an actor who is pretty much always there. The opportunity is there to bring in this character a lot more.
So our rescue team makes their final stand on an island. They're on Lolaseu. And just as their rescue is about to receive, there comes Osi Sobek and his final push of battle droids. I didn't realize that Osi was qualified on a staff personally. And as Osi makes an attempt to do away with Tarkin, reasoning that if he can't have the intel, nobody has, lo and behold, he gets ganocted by little Ahsoka. Now that, I thought that was pretty impressive. Her to run him through from the back showed a little bit of dark there in her, which has been something that was hinted at, of course, in the horrible Mortis trilogy we'd all rather forget about. But I really thought that was an interesting twist of things, that she had to rescue Tarkin, who she has despised as, well, up until that moment, honestly, and probably still does, because he wasn't all that grateful.
You know, at first my reaction was, this is like what Anakin did in the Mandalorian trilogy, where he's just like, what? He was going to blow up the ship. So at first my reaction was dark. But then as the more I thought about it, you know, Evan Peel died and trusted information to her. And I kind of, the more I thought about it, I was like, well, she had to save Tarkin. Otherwise, the information she had would have been useless, in a sort of a way she's letting down Evan Peel. And not that he really died to protect the information specifically, but in a way, that's what this whole mission was about. So I kind of thought about it more and was like, yeah, you know, Tarkin's like the most valuable person there right now, aside from herself. So I felt like she was doing it for Evan Peel, though. Not to be dark, but just like, hey, Evan Peel's death is worthless if I don't really protect all of this information, not just what I have.
You know, so it's almost like a domino effect, though, to take out Sobek, because you got R2-D2 using the smoke or the fire extinguisher or whatever. Then 5 steps in. Then sort of Tarkin, though he's not very effective. Then Ahsoka, once he's grabbing Tarkin, it's really sort of a... it's not just that one moment where one character takes him out. And you're like, why else, you know, is everybody else in the scene? They really give a chance for all these different characters to try to take him out. And finally, it's Ahsoka at the last moment taking him out. Although, thank goodness he dropped Tarkin where he did, and he didn't just topple forward and Tarkin go flying on into the lava or something. That would have, you know, stunk for Ahsoka. It brings forward a question, though, you know, one of those Infinities type what-if questions. I mean, imagine if Ahsoka had failed. You know, Tarkin dies. You know, think about how that might have affected the course of events. I mean, you don't have a Tarkin. Would someone else have been commanding the Death Star and it just wouldn't have mattered? Somebody else just would have been in his place. Nothing really changes. What about, at least from an EU standpoint, the idea of the Tarkin doctrine, rule by fear, that helped, at least in part, push the idea of using the Death Star and using super weapons in the first place? He's already passed along the battle planetoid stuff and all that kind of stuff from Rogue Planet. But, I mean, you got to wonder how much this character, who really, you know, he's a big part of A New Hope, but how big of a part is he really in the overall saga? I mean, yes, he's played by a big name actor. Yes, he's a big player in A New Hope. We get to see him. But in the grand scheme of things, is he that big of a factor in what we see within the Star Wars saga, at least in Lucas's perspective, if not the broader perspective?
I thought it was pretty cool. For some reason, I was hoping he would get to like fight a little bit, and he went out pretty quick, but that's just because I like the character and I wanted to keep him around. But the way that Ahsoka killed him, I thought, like you were saying, was kind of dark. That was a cold-blooded kind of murder right there. That was, again, they're really kind of pushing it in this series, like what kind of like tone they're trying to set. And I'm liking where they're going. It was cool.
Now everybody's back on Coruscant, happy and good. And as we found out in a conversation earlier, Tarkin's going to take his information to the Chancellor, who apparently he's all buddy-buddy with.
Going back to earlier in the episode, I thought that was some really good dialogue. I really enjoyed that whole, you know, Anakin's a little snarky with him. He's like, well, that's not really a good career move. And Tarkin's like, well, I'm not worried about career moves. I'm on the Chancellor speed dial on his Fab Five or whatever list. And you know what? We're good. And then there's like a little connection because Anakin's like, and I don't know if there's a connection or they're trying to one up. And he's like, well, you know what? I'm pretty good friends with the Chancellor too, you know, and I'm a Jedi too. And, you know, just watch it or whatever. I don't know if there's a connection or they're one upping each other. But then you also had that, you know, other piece of dialogue where Anakin was sort of stepping up to bat for Tarkin a little bit, saying, well, he just doesn't believe that us Jedi are really capable of doing it. And I think he's right. And so, yeah, Tarkin, you know, this is where we're starting to see some of the foundation for what we know is going to happen. I thought it was kind of cool. I thought they handled it well without being too, you know, what we always say, hey, look, it's Star Wars. We remember what happened in the movies.
You know, it ended that conversation with the, oh, really? Yes, really, or however it was that they put it. You get that connection there that they're both sort of on the same big Mama Jamma's good side, but at the same time, there's sort of that rivalry. So I think it was actually both. They have a connection, but they also have that one-upmanship there, because you see that as the way that it's played out later. You've got that quasi-tension between them in A New Hope, and the expanded universe grows from that and has sort of the rivalry between the two.
You know, something I was thinking about listening to your guys' show from last week was, if you really want to get into a different dynamic with Tarkin and Vader, listen to the Brian Daly radio drama, because there is a lot more of Vader saying, hey, you can't blow up Alderaan. The Emperor needs to be consulted. And Tarkin, I love this line because it's so different. Tarkin says, do not think to challenge me. You are not dealing with Mahdi or one of those others. This is my decision to make alone. It is so powerful. I love that bit from the radio drama, to where it's very much like, hey, Vader, shut up. This is my Death Star. So, yeah, I constantly thought about that, of what this dynamic is trying to set up that we're seeing here. So I think that's really neat how they pulled that together.
This is a really cool scene. I feel like they did a lot in a very little span of time. Like you guys were saying, they had this kind of tone, undertone, kind of unspoken tension between the two of them. They're kind of reaching this tentative camaraderie, but there's also this rivalry between them. And it was really, I thought, well done, because they didn't say that much. It was only like a minute or so, the whole conversation, but I feel like they really captured the characters and they really had a really good character moment. They can do some really good stuff with these character moments when they put their mind to it. I think that's one of the reasons why I was so disappointed that they didn't do it for Fives, but they really nailed this. This made me grin.
I like especially the ending. I mean, Tarkin walks away, but they're still sort of debating Tarkin's ideas, and there's Anakin basically saying that if they aren't willing to go far enough to win the war, they could lose everything. And I found that really profound, because in a sense, that's what he does, and he does lose everything. He goes too far and loses it all, and essentially costs the Jedi everything. I found it was interesting that we're sort of seeing where his philosophy, which seems like it makes so much sense right now, is going to be what winds up blowing up in their faces later. I always like to see Anakin have those hints at what's to come, where you can see the flaws in what he thinks is impeccable logic.
Along that line, I thought it's really good to see how, especially in this season, we've seen them develop Anakin to where he is Anakin that we know. I mean, he's been Anakin, and he's been cocky, and he's been a little bit sure of himself, but now we're seeing ideals in him that he's expressed in episode 2 and episode 3. So we're kind of getting more deeper into Anakin's personality, and that's coming out in the Clone Wars. And that's really, I feel like, bringing it home, linking the two the Clone Wars and the movies together even stronger. So I'm really impressed with Anakin's characterization here.
I'm really glad you brought that up, Dan, because this is something I've been meaning to like throw out there for a couple of episodes now. We've been kind of very slowly been seeing Anakin progress towards this more almost like obsessive character where he's getting these set fixations of what has to be done and what you need to do. And we've been kind of gradually seeing not maybe grow darker, but pick up tendencies and behaviors that could very easily swing dark. And one of the things I was really concerned about when we first started watching the Clone Wars episodes is he was too heroic. He was this shining white knight kind of character almost, and he didn't really do anything that was dark. And I had a really hard time reconciling him with either Revenge of the Sith Anakin and also Attack of the Clones kind of whiny kid Anakin. And I was kind of concerned that they didn't really get him, as it were. But now I feel like they're really kind of slowly, in this very believable way, grading him towards this character that we eventually see, this battle-hardened kind of like fixated on ending the war character that we see at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith. And it's great. I love it.
Because that the only thing that's missing as far as pushing him towards episode three is he does get back to sort of that quasi-whiny, sort of uncomfortable Anakin anytime he's around Padme. And right now, it seems like at least any time that they interact here in the Clone Wars cartoon series, he's much more confident than he seemed to be at just about any other time. He's bumbling through lines when it comes to dealing with Padme in Episode 3. You know, it's because I'm so in love with you, and he completely botches the line that makes it look like he's just, you're not pretty, it's just because I'm blinded. You know, I mean, it really, he screws it up. But you don't get to see that much here. He's getting that drive. And he's getting that darker edge, but at the same time, he's almost becoming too confident, at least without some kind of balancing out to give us that bumbling, it's a girl kind of thing when it comes to Padme.
Now we're left with Tarkin running off to Daddy, and Yoda saying that he's going to discuss matters with Palpatine as far as who should have the information. Now, personally, I'm pretty sure when Yoda gets there, Palpatine's going to put on his nice, friendly, let's all work together and share our information face, and that's how he's going to have all the information, and the Jedi will also have all the information, but they're not the strike at the heart of the Confederacy type. So I'm just, the only part I'm disappointed about is that we didn't see that meeting and then see him turn around and call Dooku like I thought that he would in the first episode. All right, now, unlike last week's episode, there was quite a bit that did affect established continuity and kind of made a little bit of its own. So let's give it over to Nathan for this week's Continuity Corner.
All right, folks. Well, this was an episode promised by Leland Chee in his Twitter to be shocking. I'm not 100% sure if that was meant to be a reference to killing a film character or killing a character we already saw die after Revenge of the Sith later in the continuity. Either way, this one stirred the pot quite a bit. Let's start with the episode guide on StarWars.com and go from there. Last week, we speculated here on the show, as other fans had on our forums and elsewhere, that the Citadel in this trilogy was somehow tied to the Citadel name for the trial in Clone Cadets, the season premiere. The episode guide has now confirmed that. We were also informed that Commander Cody blasting a crab droid by leaping on top of it in this episode is a reference to a similar move made by a different unnamed clone trooper in Revenge of the Sith on Utapau. For what it's worth, yes, I looked it up. The shots are at 4 minutes into this episode and an hour and 20 minutes into Revenge of the Sith, right around Order 66. We're told that Ossie Sobek was originally to have been killed by Tarkin in cold blood, causing the Jedi to question his honor instead of having Ossie killed by Ahsoka to save Tarkin. We get another Lucasian reference here to the, quote, Old Republic, and the idea that the current Republic, under Supreme Chancellors Valorum and then Palpatine, is considered a sort of new Republic in relation to the way the Republic existed prior to the end of the New Sith Wars and the Rusan Reformations, which are EU concepts based on Lucas's backstory of Vader and Sidious's Sith Order, as first presented in 1999's The Phantom Menace, and through information from Lucas that was included by Terry Brooks in his novelization of that film. Other references to the same idea include not letting the Republic that stood for 1,000 years be sundered, the origin of the Darksaber in the Mandalorian trilogy, and so forth. We have ties between starfighters here, as Saisi Ten and Ahsoka share the same pattern on their starfighters, while Adigalia and Plo Koon share a pattern. In both pairings, the patterns are the same, but the colors are different. Sounds a lot like toy manufacturing to me, but I'll leave that to the show's experts on that. The episode guide again points out the use of a Wilhelm, which is so ubiquitous in Star Wars that I fail to see why we constantly have it pointed out to us. We're given an explanation for how the gunship in this episode can be used in space, whereas gunships are generally thought of as atmospheric vessels. The EU actually does show them out of atmosphere periodically, so that isn't a totally accurate assumption. But either way, the episode guide takes the time to point out that this variant has a sealed cabin and search spotlights while being designated, at least in descriptive parlance, as a space gunship. The Anubas in this episode are also pointed out as early Episode 1 concept artwork being brought back. Of course, they never made it into the Phantom Menace, so many assume them to be EU creations from the wildlife of Star Wars, which is the source most frequently associated with them. We're also told that their cages were inspired by the Velociraptor cages in Jurassic Park, a nice Lucas to Spielberg reference. We also have a new Republic officer, Admiral Coburn, on the Venator at the end. Unmentioned in the episode guide, this is our first time hearing Saisi 10 speak in this series, having seen him in Witches of the Mist and Counterattack. He is voiced by series regular D. Bradley Baker. Tarkin here comments that he is in Palpatine's favor, which is consistent with his expanded universe background, where he gained favor by, among other things, passing along Wraith Sinar's plans for a battle planetoid, which helps give rise to the concept of the Death Star. Of course, then we have the big one. The death of Evan, or Even, or whatever, Peel, for whom death arrives like butterflies. Yeah, I had to do it. It's my only chance. He's dead! If you're an Expanded Universe hater, or one of those who find continuity too nitpicky at times, I'd suggest fast-forwarding now. The mini-rant that follows puts all this into a broader context of continuity issues with a novel series in which Peel first was killed off. The guy just can't win. The episode guide reads as follows. The Expanded Universe of Star Wars novels originally had Evan Peel survive the Clone Wars only to be killed while as a fugitive in the early days of the Empire. Peel's death in the Citadel mission is the character's true fate. I emailed Leland about the issue before the episode guide was posted, but he was already answering for us in the form of a forum post and blog post over on StarWars.com. His answer reads, "This certainly affects a chunk of the continuity of the first Coruscant Knights book in which Evan Peel's death was originally depicted. The rest of the continuity of that series will remain intact, though this does leave open the question of who was Jax Pabin's master. Peel has long been a sticking point, because we never killed him off in the pre-Episode 3 Clone Wars EU, and yet he was still missing from the Episode 3 Jedi Council. He was in the Episode 2 Council only because they reused Episode 1 footage. We never fully explained who Anakin replaced when Palpatine appointed him to the Council, and so we just went off the assumption that it was Peel who got the short shrift. So when we went looking for a prominent Jedi to kill off early on in Coruscant Knights, Evan Peel fit the bill. It wasn't until after the Coruscant Knights trilogy was completed that we learned that Evan Peel's death would be rewritten with this episode. In the interim, we've tried to minimize that number of sources that mention Peel's fate. Hopefully this answers some of the questions regarding this change in continuity." So, here we have what amounts to a situation where Lucas created a character for Episode 1, and the EU gave him backstory, such as in Jedi Council Acts of War. Lucas then brought the character back in stock footage for Episode 2, but still didn't really flesh him out. The EU continued to use him somewhat infrequently, as did the Genndy Tartakovsky micro-series. Then, Lucas dropped the character entirely when Episode 3 came around. Rather than assuming he was dead, as was the case with other characters like Adi Gallia, who ends up killed in the Obsession comic so close to Episode 3 that it's unlikely to be contradicted, or Eeth Koth, who was supposedly killed on Geonosis, then made a miraculous retconned recovery when Lucas brought him back for the Clone Wars cartoon series, thus far not accounting for how he was later replaced by Agen Kolar, the Expanded Universe folks assumed that Peel was alive, just unseen. So when looking for any old Jedi Master to start off the Coruscant Knights book by kicking the bucket, and be named as Jedi Master for Jax Pavin, the novel series protagonist, they decided to use Evan Peel. Unfortunately, Lucas has either now decided to kill off Peel, or already decided it that way all along and didn't tell anyone. So the character's later appearance in Coruscant Knights just after Episode 3 is impossible. Thus, they're applying, it seems, a similar retcon as was done with Jedi Alliance recently. You may recall that Jedi Alliance, a video game, includes Zero the Hutt free and not pursued by the authorities. But we later learn that Zero was in prison, all the way up from the film to evil plans and his death in Hunt for Zero. We were then told that Jedi Alliance is indeed still in continuity. But it happens during the Clone Wars film, which means that all the instances of Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, and Anakin in the game, some of which are unavoidable due to lack of character selection, are assumed to be some other selectable Jedi, not that trio, who are obviously occupied elsewhere. Now we have a similar solution for Coruscant Knights. Yes, Jax Pavin's former Jedi Master dies and kicks off that series. But it's no longer Evan Peel, but some currently unnamed Jedi Master. It won't help those reading it without knowing the retcon, but that's the explanation, and it at least follows some level of precedent. I should also note here, though, that continuity problems with Evan Peel are not exactly new for the Coruscant Knight books either. That trilogy, soon to be a tetralogy with a somewhat surprising addition of a fourth book in the series announced a while back, is one of the two most egregiously continuity error-bearing publications in recent years, perhaps in all of Star Wars publishing from 1976 to present. Supposedly due to illness on the writer's part, according to some accounts, or by others to originally planning to set the Coruscant Knights books, as Jedi Twilight, Street of Shadows, Patterns of Force, and the upcoming The Last Jedi that shares its name with the Marvel Star Wars issue, very close to the classic trilogy, rather than very soon after the prequel trilogy, the Coruscant Knights series was laden with numerous chronological errors that were never apparently caught by the writer, editors, or anyone else involved in the production process. Moreover, those errors weren't even consistent. In one place, the Phantom Menace is put a decade too early. Then in another place, a mere 5 years too early. Neither of which was, of course, correct. This entirely undermined the end of the third book, as a certain element in the story required that around 2 decades had passed since the Clone Wars in order for the ending of Patterns of Force to make sense. But while Reeves' many errors might have allowed such a length of time to have passed, it had instead been only a matter of weeks or months since the Clone Wars ended, making the entire payoff of the original Coruscant Knights books completely illogical. Sue Rostoni later took responsibility for the errors, which certainly weren't her cross alone to bear, calling it one of those, quote, stupid mistakes that get past multiple editors. Bear in mind that this stupid mistake that made it past several editors first appeared in the second book, and then was still somehow perpetuated in the third. Did it really get past everyone twice? How another book was produced in this series, I'll never understand, but that's probably as far as I should go with Coruscant Knights, other than to say that in this already error-laden series, we were also told that Evan Peel was using his eyes, plural, possibly a holdover from perhaps using a different Jedi in the first place, and then just slipping in Evan Peel's name with a good old replace all command when it was decided to use that character instead. So, Coruscant Knights stands, more or less. But at least one character is now currently anonymous at worst, in flux at best, and we'll have to see how that's dealt with later. One wonders how any references back to Peel's part in the first book will be handled, if at all, in the upcoming fourth one, as it will be the only one released since this episode aired or was brought to the attention of those behind the expanded universe side of Star Wars. Will the new book expand upon this retcon and create a new name, making it inconsistent with the other three books? Or will the fourth book continue to be consistent with the other three, mentioning Peel as Pavin's master, but in doing so, continue to be inconsistent with Citadel Rescue? One has to wonder, and I suppose we'll see when the book finally hits store shelves. Also, as an ending side note here, I should make a correction from earlier in this trilogy. In one of the other continuity corners, I mentioned the fact that Lola Seiyu has been said by many to be based perhaps on concepts from Knights of the Old Republic to the Sith Lords. Because of the cataclysmic nature of it, I mentioned the fact that this was probably based on Malachor V. Apparently, my brain was combining two planets together when thinking about the issue of Knights of the Old Republic 2. Lola Seiyu actually looks a lot more like Paragus 2 at the beginning of the game, not Malachor V near the end and in flashbacks. My apologies for the error, and my thanks to Dan Grievous for pointing that out on the forums. And that rounds out a rather long continuity corner.
All right, now, we did get quite a few voicemails this week. Now, due to time constraints, we're not going to hear all of them, but we do appreciate everybody calling in. And once again, if you do want to, let us know what you thought of, well, now we're down to the last one. Let us know what you think of next week's two episodes, and then shortly thereafter we will have our end-of-the-season wrap-up where you can let us know what you thought of Clone Wars Season 3 as a whole. But let's go ahead and get into our voicemails.
Hi, Fernando here. I just finished watching the new episode of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. And I have to say, wow, it was really great. I was kind of shocked that Evan Peele died. Pretty sad way to die, but, well, he died in honor. And it was kind of sad that Ahsoka was the only one there. And if Ahsoka wasn't there, he surely would have been eaten by that creature. Yeah, and Tarkin, I really don't want to see any more Tarkin in the series because he's just really, really boring. But in this episode, he was okay. And I liked how Ahsoka did not like Tarkin, but Anakin was, like, defending Tarkin every time Ahsoka was talking trash about him. And then it was Ahsoka who ended up saving Tarkin's life at the end. And anyway, great. Great episode. Really liked it. And I can't wait for the season finale with Chewbacca. It's going to be great. And I love Republic Forces Radio Network, and I listen to it all the time. It's really funny. And yeah, bye.
I'm kind of in agreement. I would like to see more of Tarkin conceptually. I'm not sure I'd like to see more of this portrayal of Tarkin, though, because he really was bland throughout most of the episode. I mean, he got those good conversations with Anakin, but in a lot of ways he was not a very dynamic character. He doesn't show a lot of emotion. And granted, I mean, that maybe that's just him as a character, but for a cartoon series that's sort of bombastic in a lot of ways, he really was kind of dull. So conceptually, it's great having him there, and the conversations he gets with Anakin are great. But yeah, if they're going to bring him back, they need to give him some more color to his personality.
Hi, it's Dev from Seattle, and damn it, I really, really wanted to see Tarkin do something snarky, say something along the lines of, well, of course the clones are dying, that's what they're here for, just so Fives could freaking lose it about the fact that his brother Echo got killed in battle and grabbed Tarkin by his crummy little neck and dangled him over the freaking lava. But it's an imperfect world. We didn't get that. We didn't get a lot of emotional payoff from this episode. Although, I was kind of surprised that they killed Master Peele. But, I mean, let's face it. Dear two Jedi Masters, if you will, the people that were always in the crowd shots, kind of seemed to come and go. Didn't he supposedly die in the novelization of episode 3, or am I just completely wrong? Anyway, next episode we get to look forward to is in 3 weeks. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot Batman is with the next episode being 3 weeks away, and it's actually two episodes, but they're just going to do it in 1 hour because it's all they've got left. What, guys? Come on. Are you too busy with your March Madness brackets to actually put that show's throwing season? You got to just give us this nice long gap after a previous other gap for the Hall of Game Awards. Anybody else hear the crickets? I hear the crickets. That's all. Bye.
Yeah, you know, to his point, I got to admit, I was a little upset that Clone Wars got preempted for the Hall of Game Awards, but whatever. But yeah, I guess we've got a couple week hiatus until April 1st where they're going to play the last two episodes. Although I am glad, I always enjoy Clone Wars more in an hour chunks or, you know, 44 minutes or whatever. But I like the hour long specials. I will be looking forward to that.
See, I'm the opposite. I think that if you're going to have the build up, I mean, they already broke this trilogy up with an episode between the first two parts, which didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And now we've got this huge gap. I mean, why not just take 3.5 and shift it back a little bit? You know, don't premiere it quite as early, or don't premiere it with a, what is it, 2 hour premiere? Or I guess that was the beginning of the season. It just seems to me like having this huge gap in the middle of it ruins some of the momentum of it. At least take our two episode season finale, since they are going to present it as two episodes, certainly they're not presenting it as one big 1 hour episode, at least in terms of the way that it flows together. Just take the one part and make it the week before April 1st. You know, it just seems, I don't know, to me, seeing two episodes back to back on one night is cool, but they never make it so that it feels like just one episode. And I'm more bothered by the gaps than seeing the benefit of the piled up ones. So yeah, I'm right there with him. Three stinking Fridays from now, we'll finally get to see the season finale. It doesn't work momentum wise for me. Just give it to us now and say forget it. Just end the season in March.
I think that's just Cartoon Network though, going for as many views as possible with these silly like award show things. I don't know if that's anything to do with Lucasfilm, but it is frustrating that they stop in the middle of stuff just before the season finale. But I don't really think there's much thought put into it other than we can get some tweens to tune in this week.
I'd agree that I would have liked to have seen some kind of recognition by Tarkin of the clones dying. I think that would have made a nice line, and it would have been a perfect jumping off point to give Five something to react to. Instead, what we get is an absolute absence of any kind of reaction to Echo's death in the previous episode. I would much prefer to have had it the way that he was suggesting than the way that it actually played out. Granted, it was a packed episode anyway, but give us a few seconds to acknowledge the fact that Echo had died, at least in terms of the Fives character. It might as well not even have been Fives in this episode for all that they used him.
Hey, this is Josh calling to share my thoughts on the newest episode of Clone Wars, the last episode in the Citadel trilogy, and this, again, was a really, really, really solid episode. I loved pretty much all the aspects. I really wished that Evan Peele didn't have to die, but I guess it was meant for a storyline. I thought the action there was great. I thought it wrapped up the whole entire trilogy really, really, really well. And definitely a couple things is how many officers or all the guys that they had captured from Evan Peele's ship, like how many of those are there? Because all the clones without a name, they all instantly got killed off. And then, you know, they kept coming back. Seems like there was like 100 of them. And then, you know, they were almost like expendable, kill them, kill them, kill them, kill them, kill them. I was wondering, you know, how many of them there were. But, yeah, I mean, it was really, really, really good overall. I didn't really see any problems with it. I also was kind of upset that Sobek died too, along with Echo in this trilogy, but well, they definitely had to do it for sake of the storyline, so I'm glad for that. But so overall, I mean, a really good episode. I don't know about next week. I don't know how it'll work out. I don't understand why we have to wait 2 weeks for it. But I guess we're gonna have to wait. So overall, a really good episode, and I'm hoping for the next episode in 4 weeks or whatever. Okay, bye.
Good evening, gang. This is Rodney from San Jose, and just wanted to share my piece on Citadel Rescue. One of the things I loved about it was the interplay between Anakin and Tarkin. One of the things I wanted that crossed my mind when I was watching it, though, was, of course, in A New Hope, Anakin Vader knows who Tarkin is, but all this development of friendship, will Tarkin really know who Vader is? That's something that crossed my mind. I also love the development of Ahsoka again, just from the facial expression. She rolls her eyes every time Tarkin made a comment or whatever, and I think somebody mentioned this last episode where the way she kind of squatted when she was up on the pipe, hey, I think I got an idea, blah, blah, blah. I love the way she's really developing and what have you. Loved the character Sobek. Listened to other podcasts and they hated him and they hated the way John Arnold Taylor characterized him, like Christopher Walken. Loved it. When I first saw it on the Citadel, the first episode, loved the way he characterized it. Loved the way they played the character. Anybody also notice in this last installment the way he had like an eye twitch or something? I thought that was really clever and creative in that. But just love the character. Another thing I want to talk about, how about when the group was being chased by the Anubas and Anakin says something to the effect of, hey, I'll be the bait, you guys hide in that cave, and then Obi-Wan clears his throat as in, oh, you forgot about me. What's up with that? You know, are they so eager to show Anakin as this valiant warrior so that Tarkin can comment about him, or is this like another character change where he's forgetting about his partner in crime, so to speak? Love the epic space battle. The when the ARC 170s were taken off from the Star Destroyers, that was so neat. That was so reminiscent of the fighters in A New Hope launching to go battle the Death Star and what have you. Anybody notice the space lardy when you were first watching it? And like, oh, wait a minute, that's not quite correct. But then later on, if you go back to StarWars.com, I guess they address that in the commentary and explain, oh, no, this is a space-worthy lardy. But that's something, again, that kind of took me out of the story for a second and whatever. Love the way that they made the comment, the reference about the Old Republic. And then I thought about, what about the Battle of Naboo and whatever, and I said, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense, because those were kind of the Naboo defense forces versus the Separatists and whatever. Also, just kind of watching the whole arc, everybody's worried about Anakin and the way he's lost his way, or he's losing his way, but again, you're watching Ahsoka, and of course, her running through Sobek from the back, which you can argue was understandable and justifiable, but just by the way she and Plo Koon are lying to cover each other or what have you. A little interesting how everybody's kind of pointing at Anakin, but other people are kind of losing their way also. Last but not least, and I'm sure Nathan P's got a lot to say about this, Evan Peele and continuity. Wow. Okay, so if continuity was a guy, can we say that the team there in Clone Wars is basically just kicking them in the jewels? Wow, that's kind of a blatant disrespect. And again, you know, we all understand the concept that, hey, Lucas and his team and their ultimate right to do what they want to do, but then kind of on a professional level, wow, you're just ignoring other artists and their work. Again, they made a comment on the commentary page about, okay, this is his true fate. Wow, I said, okay, so that's a slap in the face to anybody. It's just, wow, I'm really interested to hear how Nathan P's going to comment on that. And then, of course, outside the episode and everything, have you guys given any thought to what you're going to do for the summer? Are you going to sit it out with a hiatus? Are you going to kind of review another Star Wars series or something, or what have you? Real curious on what you guys going to do with that. Anyway, enjoy the show, and take care.
What about the Battle of Geonosis? I mean, Sayce Tin is just like, he's just like sitting everything out. You know, it was an out-of-body experience. He hasn't experienced Christophsis, Geonosis, Ryloth, or anything up to this point. Wow, we haven't seen battles like these. I really hope he's talking about the Clone Wars as a whole, because otherwise, he's a really oblivious guy. I mean, serene, yes, but oblivious at the same time.
Well, his character model's only been around for a little bit, so he missed a lot of the first two seasons.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. Now, with the whole idea of, you know, does Vader, or does Tarkin know who Vader is, EU-wise, he doesn't, but he does spend, I mean, he doesn't know for sure, but he does eventually investigate Vader to kind of know who his rival, in a sense, is, who this is that he's working with, that he's essentially jockeying for power with. He does wind up discovering about the death of Anakin with no body recovered right around the same time that Darth Vader shows up. So he's pretty sure that Anakin became Darth Vader. It's escaping me exactly where it was. I want to say it was in the Death Star novel that didn't really explain much of the background of the actual Death Star, but did give hints at that. I seem to recall that being one of the strong points of that particular novel, was to give hints about how that relationship worked. And as for the whole idea of, you know, kicking the continuity in the jewels, you know, I mean, we should be used to it by now, really. And I understand the idea of them saying it's his true fate. It kind of is it feels like a flipping of the proverbial bird towards the writers. But again, speaking to someone who's written in this universe, you know going into it, and you're playing in somebody else's sandbox, and they could change things at any given time. You have to be willing to accept that fact, and accept that it's nothing personal, just business, so to speak, if Lucas were to override something.
But we will reveal what we are doing for the summer on our season finale show, which is apparently going to be 6 months from now, when the season actually ends.
Hi, this is Austin calling in for my review of this week's Clone Wars episode, Rescue, I think it was. This was the third part of the three-part prison rescue trilogy. We had the opening credits with Evan Peele being captured, the Jedi going in and rescuing him, the second part where they were at the Citadel trying to escape, and the third part where they eventually made it out. This episode overall was very good. I don't know if my TV was just set to HD or not, but this set new standards for the graphics and the animation and everything there. I recently went back and watched Ambush, the very first Clone Wars episode, and I can tell that in one of the scenes the droids are just a model put on the background. Here, it looks like everything is just woven together perfectly. The animation is so good that I just want to ask, did anybody see Sobek's eye twitching while he was talking to Count Dooku? I found that just amazing. And the fact that they can put together this amazing graphics with the amazing music that they put in there, just amazing. Like, within horror movies and novels, or not even novels, if you're reading a horror novel, it's not as scary as if you're listening to horrible music along with it, because it raises the tension, what's going on. When they sent the creatures after him, they had the music. It was just amazing. And the timing of the music was excellent, too, because when Sobek was going to throw Tarkin into the pool of yellow liquid stuff, and Ahsoka stabbed him, which you'll get into, and he fell down, as he thanked her, the music stopped, and he walked off, and Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka just stare at him like, really? You're not even going to say thank you? Nothing? That's it? And then they come down, and the rescue thing goes on. That's what really hit me about this. The storyline was pretty good. I liked the character development for Ahsoka and all the rest, and Tarkin. He was a bit different than I thought he would eventually turn out, but I guess the main thing for the continuity bomb this week would be the death of Evan Peel, which you guys will go over, obviously. That's my thoughts. Bye.
I do like the fact that they had the eye twitching. I did notice that, and somehow it didn't wind up in my notes when I went back and rewatched it the second time. But yeah, it was kind of cool. It made me wonder why that wasn't there in the previous ones. I mean, I guess it's supposed to be there as he's getting more and more stressed out, so now his eye is twitching. But it kind of would have been cool if this was something that was a tick for the character throughout instead of just showing up here in this episode. It kind of felt like, wow, here's something we can do with this character we didn't do before, but it's cool, so we're just going to throw it in. We're going to make up a new rule for the third part of a trilogy. Not that we've ever seen that before. Mortis!
But, you know, as somebody who has been pushed to the point of stress where your eye twitches from time to time, it doesn't happen at first. It's about the eighth or ninth time that you're having to tell the kids that you're going to pull the car over that your eye starts to twitch. So, you know, I can see where it waited until the third episode to come up.
You're having a twitch right now, aren't you?
Yes, yes, I am.
But, you know, he did have the far more severe call from Dooku. Maybe he was twitching before that, but he had a lot of Dooku interaction in the last episode, in this episode. It might be getting to him.
Hi, Maddie here. I was calling to talk about Citadel Rescue. I really enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed seeing Anakin and Tarkin. That was very cool. I really liked the part where they shook hands at the end. Oh, I thought that was cool. I could actually see where they could be working together in episode 4. I also enjoyed the part where Anakin and Tarkin, you know, they discuss in the beaded. I also thought Ahsoka was very cool in this episode. And at the end, it was revealed that, you know, Master Plo actually cares for Ahsoka. And, you know, I could see where she might end up leaving Anakin for Master Plo. I could see how that was a possibility. So thanks, and bye.
I do think the ending there, though, I mean, we kind of glossed over it with Plo and Ahsoka, where it's, did you order her to go? It seems I did. What kind of answer is that? If you're trying to cover her butt, you really didn't do a good job there, Sparky. It was one of those where it's like, okay, and she's smiling like, that was a good answer. He just covered my butt. No, he didn't. No. Sorry.
We do want to thank everybody who called in this week. Once again, we had more voicemails than we could play in the time allotted, but we do appreciate everyone letting us know what you thought. We encourage you to come back in 3 weeks and let us know what you thought of the season finale, and then let us know what your overall thoughts, feelings, emotions, dreams, and hopes were for season 3 in general, and what you're looking forward to in season 4. All right, now we did get a preview for our season finale with Chewbacca, which we've kind of hammered on this a little bit over the past couple weeks, knowing that it's Chewbacca and two episodes at the same time, but
we actually have a preview, not just in video, we have it in Star Wars Insider. This is Star Wars Insider number 124, that's the one with that cool orange and white cover with Chewbacca with little Ahsoka, and Ahsoka's covered with dust, I guess, from battle. She kind of looks like she's been partying with Charlie Sheen a little bit. Winning! That's going to be our new bingo item. So we have Launchpad in the front of Insider. That's sort of like their very quick little news snippet bits. Launchpad, like for the last few issues, has had season 3 previews. And they have the preview in here for the last two episodes. They're not nearly as spoilerific as the ones in the Clone Wars magazine. We have Padawan Lost in Wookiee Hunt, and we're given that the director is Dave Filoni both times, no big surprise. The writer is the same for both. It's Bonnie Mark. I don't think this is someone we've seen do episodes previously, at least not in seasons 1 and 2. I'm not as familiar with all the names of the writers for season 3, but it does seem like a new writer here. Maybe I'm wrong. But Padawan Lost is described as... The hunt is on. Can Ahsoka Tano save a group of younglings stranded on the planet Iwaska? I guess is how you pronounce it. Iwasskah. Will Anakin disobey orders and mount a rescue attempt? Time is running out as the Trandoshan hunters are getting closer to their prey. Then we have Wookiee Hunt. An unexpected ally lends a hand as Ahsoka and the Padawans formulate a daring plan of escape. As the Trandoshans move in for the kill, all hopes rest on a kindly Wookiee named Chewbacca. And it gives us basically just a series of quick images. You've got Chewbacca with Ahsoka and a couple of the Padawans sitting around like a fire, like a campfire type thing. And then you've got two Wookiees with really kind of cool blaster type weapons fighting, shooting off what appears to be green blaster bolts. Then we have a couple of shots of Trandoshans, one of a pair with a big gun, one of one kind of like growling. You've got one shot of just Ahsoka, and then you've got a shot of Ahsoka and the other three Padawans. And I got to tell you, she looks really, really young amongst these Padawans. Like, it really kind of throws off the maturity of the character so far, unless these Padawans are meant to be a little more mature than it seems like they are. But we've got a preface there, and then they've got a little quick blurb from Peter Mayhew basically talking about how great it is that they brought back Chewbacca. And in his words, everything's right, the face is great. I think everyone will be pleased with what the animation team has accomplished. They've done a wonderful job. So it's got the thumbs up of the guy who played Chewbacca. That's got to be a good thing.
Is anybody else really kind of thrown by the advert that they're playing for Chewie? I don't know if you guys are, I don't know if it's just in my area or something, but they have it like blacked out. Like you can kind of see a silhouette. And it looks like one of those cop shows where they have like the sex offender or something blacked out. For some reason, that really throws me every time I see it. But for the actual commercial, for the actual advert, I think I'm kind of excited to see Chewie, but I've been trying actually to a little bit not pay much attention to the previews because I feel like they really color my thoughts on the episode before I even see it. So I'm trying to just kind of wait and see what happens on this. I don't know how they're going to use Chewie. I would love, like Jerry was saying, to see something with Yoda and get something behind that good relations with the Wookiees line he gives in Revenge of the Sith. But I'm just kind of wait and see. I don't really know what to expect from this, and I'm trying not to expect anything because I feel like that gives me the best viewing experience.
I'm just looking forward to the fact that we've got Chewbacca in something because he doesn't really get a whole lot of stuff to do in the backstory. He gets a few events in his history, but nothing really in-depth, and this should be pretty cool to see. It ties together into Revenge of the Sith very well. Only thing I'm concerned about is if this opens the door, as we've said in past episodes, to young Han, because we know the concept art existed. As long as they stick with Chewie, I think this will be pretty cool, although I'm not sure that this story, the way that it's described, is really the kind of wham-bam season finale that we've come to expect from the Clone Wars. I've got a feeling it's going to be a season that just kind of ends, rather than ending on an awesome explosive note.
Yeah, I think we're actually going to see one that ends with us not having the conclusion to the arc. I think, since this is a two-parter, I think we might actually see us having to come back for the first episode of season 4 to wrap this up. Also, like you, Nathan, I think that Chewbacca does present a good opportunity. We could see some Chewbacca stories because, I mean, why was he right there with Yoda, one of the go-to Wookiees in episode 3? Is he the reason that Yoda has such good relations with the Wookiees? Is he working with the Jedi Council a lot? Is that why? So that could, as long as it doesn't pave the way for young Han, because there's no reason for young Han. Chewbacca can exist without Han Solo in his prequel existence. That would be absolutely fine. There's no need to go down that road necessarily.
I mean, wouldn't Han have to be like 12?
His concept art was a very young, like young boy slash young teen Han Solo, as I remember. So, yeah, I mean, it would be a very young Han, but they could do it. I think he was supposed to be, what, 25, I guess it was, in A New Hope. So, granted, theoretically, he'd only be about 6 years old here. But that only assumes that that age of 25 still holds. Well, you know, so who says that it has to hold? They've tweaked the ages of Vader significantly, the age of the twins, the age of Obi-Wan, and in theory, sort of the age of C-3PO. So I could see them tweaking it a little bit in order to make it fit with the concept art if they wanted to use it. I just hope that they don't. I do like they're bringing in the Trandoshans here and the idea of sort of the rivalry between the Trandoshans and the Wookiees, because as I recall, that was something more developed in the EU than anything coming from Lucas. I mean, Bossk didn't even get a species until one of the West End Games galaxy guides. I think it was back in 1989, 1990 or so. And then it just kind of kept getting developed as it went along in, you know, Tales from the Bounty Hunters. And then you've got other stories set in the prequel era and the Clone Wars era that really pushed into it. But, you know, it seems like something they're actually going to grab and sort of run with, which will be pretty cool. Although, and I've seen people make this mention previously, saying like, oh, well, it's so cool that they're bringing in all this stuff with like they brought in like Delta Squad, the Republic Commandos got brought in, and they got the Kashyyyk stuff, and, you know, it seems like they're referencing the Republic Commando stuff a little bit, and yeah, but it seems like what we're seeing, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you guys might have noticed something that I haven't. It seems like when the Clone Wars tries to reach out and reference something EU-wise, they are significantly more likely to reach out to LucasArts and the video games than they are to reach out and reference the books and such. I would almost say the reason why they might be playing off this rivalry between the Trandoshans and the Wookiees isn't so much grabbing from EU per se, but they're grabbing from the Republic Commando video game that Lucas apparently is fond of, and it just so happens that that was something from the EU that worked its way into the game. I wonder what it is they're really paying homage to by tying in this storyline.
All right, so we'll be back in 3 weeks on April 1st for our season finale of Padawan Lost and Wookiee Hunt, and then shortly thereafter for our season 3 wrap-up, where we will announce what we're going to do over the summer other than drink, get sunburned, and nap. I want to thank everybody who called in. So many voicemails. It's great to hear everybody enjoying the show and enjoying hearing us ramble on and on about the show. And I want to thank Jen and Nathan P. for sticking with me on this whole arc, and Jerry being available to fill in for Boy Everest, who just couldn't take it anymore. Thanks a lot, everybody, and we will see you in 3 weeks.
All right, see you guys.
See you next time.
See
you.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
No, Echo wasn't really dead. With the death of Osi Sobek, he takes over running the Citadel, and he's going to be back at the end of Season 5 to wreak his vengeance because they left him there without looking for the... I don't know. I'm, this isn't a soap opera. What am I thinking?
Here's what I'm thinking, though. To go along with your idea, then, wouldn't you get this great scene between Fives and Echo? And he's like, you are my brother, Echo! Right?
right? Because, I mean, they really are kind of pod brothers here. That'd be kind of sweet.
I thought you were going to make some episode 3 reference and then go with Fives losing the will to live.
No, but, you know, that could very well happen. He can't deal with it. Maybe that's where they're going here. Maybe that's why he was so quiet. Throughout this episode, the death of Echo has affected him so much, he's slowly losing the will to live. What we'll find is, in the next episode, they've killed him or had him commit suicide somewhere off-screen, just like Mina Bonteri back earlier in the season. That's what you're setting up.
Now, if he loses the will to live, he'll just, like, slump down a corner and just die, you know, like Padme did. He'll give birth to some twins, and then that's it.
I don't know if that's a road that we're ready to cross in the Clone Wars.
Hey, they're genetically altered clones. You can do anything with them.
We're like, let's make 2 clones of him and have one altered to be a girl, and then it's like the twins, and yeah, you get this nice parallel there. And then one of the twins is supposed to bring balance to the clones or something.
Stop giving them ideas.
Unlimited lunacy.
Check off that box. All right.
I know. I did that just for you, Dan. Just for you.
Thank you, Nathan.